Hello, everyone. My name is Joshua Gilliland. I'm one of the founding attorneys of the Legal Geeks. And with me tonight is Nari Ely and Thomas Harper for us to talk about the Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 4, The Gathering Storm, which either sounds like Stephen Oates's pre-Civil War book, The Whirlwind of War, well, there's Whirlwind of War and then The Coming Storm, or something that's QAnon on accident. So... that part's not fun, but I was like, really? Really?
It's a common literary phrase. I'm not going to assume that last one.
But still, I mean, maybe, anyway. I think my favorite episode to date, Nari, what did you think of this one?
I really liked it. Without skipping ahead, I think it confirms, there was a line in there that I think confirms one of my theories about what happened to the Tuskens, but we'll see.
I thought it was a really good episode with a few great parts in it, but overall a lot of fun.
Yeah, and they, in my opinion, they really worked out the flashback versus present scene. To the best degree out of all of them so far. Because the first episode, it kind of bothered me with the way it went back and forth. And then it's gotten better. And I thought this was the best integration of it. And hearing he's all healed, I think we're done with flashbacks. So I'm not sure how many episodes are left, but I'm cautiously optimistic that it's going to be linear storytelling going forward.
Come back to this episode on Wednesday evening when it's like 58 minutes of flashback and like 1 minute, and then the credits of present day.
We were all wrong. That did not go the way I thought it was going to go. Oy vey. Well, let's talk about the multitude of legal issues in this episode, which are a lot of traditional legal issues we've seen in Star Wars before, but with new spins on it. And the first is the duty to rescue. We flash back to the Mandalorian episode, The Gunslinger, and where we see the flares going off, which is the assault on that Din Djarin and the Gunslinger had against Fennec. And we have Boba on the high-speed Bantha making it eventually to Fennec's location after the fight. And apparently she's been bleeding out. She's only mostly dead.
Hanging out.
There's a big difference.
So they go to Miracle Max.
Yeah.
Put her back together again. And it raises this issue of, did Boba Fett have a duty to help her, finding her dying in the desert? And two, we then have an issue with getting medical attention. And this is a multi-layered analysis. So first, let's talk about the duty to rescue, and then let's get to the medical consent and treatment issues. So, Nari, do you want to take on if there's a duty to rescue Fennec?
I'm happy to start, which I think is that to start with the ordinary, just fundamental premise that we don't normally have a duty to rescue others. Typically, there has to be some kind of a special relationship or other heightened duty involved, especially because there are often liability issues that arise from attempts to rescue. And where we're talking normally about like Good Samaritan laws, we're not talking about laws that require you to be a Good Samaritan. We're talking about laws that protect people who come to others' aid and rescue, and then arguably it doesn't go the way they planned and someone thinks they're liable for an injury that happened as a result. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's any, at this point, special relationship between Fett and Shand, right? There, he knows about her as like the legendary assassin, but there's no special relationship. He just has come upon someone apparently dead or dying in the desert. While we would hope that there's like a moral obligation for most of us to come to someone's aid if we find them that way. Does anyone disagree with me? I don't think there's ordinarily a legal obligation.
No, I think him. Yeah, I think, I don't think he, no, I don't think he has any legal obligation whatsoever to pick her up and slowly take her to medical care
on
board this Bantha.
What that look like? I mean, straight shot, where they go around.
I know, there are snail races, I will just say.
Like watching a turtle race. I mean, how's this going to play out? But yeah,
it's probably mostly which one can just walk in a straighter line is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
They're rugged, they're adorable, and they can take the desert heat and keep on ticking, but they're not built for speed. So there's God knows how long it took them to get there and how long of a walk it was to Moss Eisley's to take her to the parlor. But that's, So talking medicine, there's like with ERs, emergency rooms, there's a duty to treat people who show up at an ER. This is like a duty to treat at a tattoo parlor.
Yes.
It's bizarre. And you can't help but wonder, those who get modifications, like I'm going to replace my eyes or change a hand, do they have the same regret people who get tattoos do, that, you know, a decade later, they wonder, this was a bad freaking idea to get a tramp stamp that turns into wings. Like, did they think about that? And there's their disclosures. Tom, you're smiling. You were in the military.
I can't say I ever had occasion to evaluate a
Tom.
I do have tattoo. Not, you know, I think looking back on 18-year-old Thomas, he might have made some different decisions, not about the tattoos themselves, but about the type. Had, you know, robotic modifications been available at the time, and if I could have afforded it, I wonder what 18-year-old Thomas would have done. I'd be doing this podcast with like a cool, like battle droid arm or something like that. I don't know.
So if it was an ER, there would be a duty to treat panic. This is not an emergency room. And so it's this weird level of buying his way into her being treated with a life-saving measure. And then it gets into issues of consent, because this isn't like putting stitches in. It's robotic parts in to keep her alive. And we've seen this with replacing a limb. We have not seen it. You know, we've seen extremes with like General Grievous, you know, that there's only a like heart and brain left and the eyes. But this is something new we haven't seen in Star Wars when it comes to medical treatment. And there are consent issues. Nari, we've talked about medical consent before. What comes to mind for someone who's almost dead, who can't physically give consent, and it's an emergency situation to put a robot digestive system and diaphragm?
Also, well, unfortunately, we do not currently have any real world parallels to this kind of level of prosthesis. Or maybe fortunately, I don't know. There is an analogy here, though, still to be made when it comes to essentially unapproved devices or treatments, right? So in the United States and in most countries, there's some kind of governmental authority that gives official approval before a medical professional can administer a treatment, be it a drug or a device. There are exceptions to that, though, and one of them is compassionate use. So there is no other alternative treatment that you think would work in this circumstance, so you're going to do something that is experimental or unauthorized. And then there's also, so that's the first wrinkle, because I think it's safe to assume that this is not an FDA-approved treatment for a gunshot wound. The second one is, as you were saying, consent. So as it often happens in an emergency medical situation, that the person is not able to give consent because they're unconscious or not in a correct state of mind. You can imagine someone might be conscious but delirious if they had a gunshot wound to the gut. Now, there are very rigorous standards that govern when you can give medical treatment or even like this, an invasive surgery, without receiving that consent. We don't see this happening in this show, probably because this person, again, it does not appear to be a licensed medical professional, but ordinarily the things that a medical professional would have to do is, to the greatest extent practicable, so that's, you know, governed by things like how quickly do you need to operate or lose the person, that kind of stuff, try to find someone else who is capable of giving that consent. So like a next of kin, if it's a child, their parent, right? Those kinds of things. You know, if you're in a circumstance where it's, you know, doctor, we operate now or you lose the patient, then the practicality of that is that you can't go try to find next of kin. But if you're in a situation where, and this happens in the real world at least, right, you have stabilized the person and now you're trying to decide whether to undergo a surgery, you might have at least a matter of hours in which you might try to make some phone calls. So that's usually what we're talking about with medical consent. I will just emphasize that, again, the touchstone of medical treatment in the United States is informed consent. There are exceptions for life-saving treatment when you cannot obtain that consent.
Yeah, and the what's layered on here as well is another thing that probably does not apply to this chop shop on Tatooine, which is ethical concerns for the, you know, we talk a lot about ethical concerns for attorneys and how that guides our practice, but there are ethical concerns as well for physicians giving the treatment. At the end of the day, even though medical care is administered, at least in real world, by a team of people, it falls on the physician at the end of the day. That's the person who has that ethical obligation. That's where the buck stops. And so layered on top of that legal duty is that ethical duty for the physician, in this case, to find a surrogate. I don't think that the chop shop artist, the mod artist that initially told him to wait, didn't have any appointments, but then magically something opened up as soon as a bag of credits got dropped on. I don't think he has the same, we'll call it appreciation for ethics or the law. I don't know, but
maybe, you know, fiber.
But he does rely on Boba Fett, and I don't know. So in this situation, you know, it's curious whether Boba Fett would be would satisfy that requirement ethically or otherwise to be the surrogate that, say, a physician would look to or could look to give authorization. And there's not a lot for the surgeon. We'll just use that really loosely here, for him to go off of. Boba Fett just kind of comes in the shop holding her. I think it's reasonable, based on the limited facts, that he has some sort of relationship, some sort of custodial relationship. He's giving care to her. I think a couple questions could have been asked, but those go right out the window as soon as the money is plopped down. So again, this is like a vicious circle that we're caught in, which is like right at home in Star Wars. But yeah, so I think in the real world, if you run into this situation, Boba Fett probably, assuming there's a little bit of time to act, Boba Fett probably gets asked a couple questions about things. And at the end of the day, there's some pretty exigent circumstances that are dictating what's happening.
It reminds me of plastic surgery. And I say that because I found out in my office in the building, the first floor, there's a new medical office. And I ran into one of the nurses and asked, "What do you do?" And they said, "Plastic surgery." And then she added, without prompting, "Right now it's mostly liposuction," which tends to make sense in the COVID world that we have, that's the procedure people are seeking out.
The COVID 19 pounds.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. I'm open to it. But it's seeing the modifications kind of have that plastic surgery feel. And there are those who get plastic surgery because, like, they've had a horrific accident and they want to, you know, have the scar tissue corrected and not, you know, and feel better about themselves because of what happened.
Which I think, so just for the curious, I believe it is referred to as reconstructive plastic surgery, or whereas the other, when it's not something that is done in order to restore, it is referred to as cosmetic.
Yeah, and
it's the same skills, though, and sometimes the surgeons will do both, but often they specialize.
And right now, we're in a place that's pretty much doing stuff that's cosmetic. And it's the exception where they're doing something life-saving for putting in robot parts to save Finnick. And her reaction seems kind of on point.
Well, Boba Fett, in true good surrogate fashion, at least kind of, he questions the fact that this surgeon doesn't close her up, doesn't cover up these parts. And he's like, well, you know, I forget the exact line, but you know, this is so beautiful, you can't cover this up. And so maybe it's a little bit of both here. You've got a little reconstructive and cosmetic going on simultaneously. I don't know.
Yeah. And she, you know, we've seen her, she does keep like the sash over her, her robot parts.
Yeah.
Because that it's gonna, but I mean, again, it solves the question of was she a droid because it doesn't look like she's aged. And we now know that she's a real lady and now has robot parts. So
she's basically a Skywalker at this point.
Yeah. It's, people lose limbs all the time. So yeah.
What's a gut?
Yeah. Oh God.
I like to think that Fennec off screen had just completed like a really intense core program and was like very proud of the results. And her main reason for being so upset was that all of her work had just been destroyed. Like you couldn't just cauterize this or something. You had to just erase all of this. I don't know.
And I want it covered and I want it to look like it was supposed to. So snap to it. They should be able to afford that now. So that's phase one. It's just the beginning. It's a glorious beginning. And this is probably the most Fennec Shan that we see in the series so far, with her being her and all the one-liners that we get to have her deliver. But we now move on to a personal services contract between Boba and Fennec being created to go recover the fire spray gunship. This is the first that I know of that the class has been identified.
Yeah, I hadn't heard it before.
It's helpful because there's a Clone Wars episode with younglings and Hondo where Hondo has one of these. So it wasn't unique to Jango Fett and then Boba Fett. There was a production line. And so it's good to know the class name and whatever. They're not going by Slave One anymore. I don't know what they're going to call it, but I'm fine with Fire Spray. That does have a nice ring to it. but it's a personal services contract to go recover property. That's not the normal personal service contract. It's normally like, I'm going to bake a cake for your wedding. I will be your photographer. Not, I will help you raid a heavily fortified position. And this is pure Star Wars. Like, stuff like this doesn't happen in the United States. Tom, did you have any reactions to the contract that they formed? And do you have any problems with any terms being non-specific?
Well, different people have different skills, different personal services that they offer. I really appreciate that as far as I can recollect, this is the first time you hear independent contractor mentioned. Yeah. Out loud in Star Wars on screen, and she's like, you know, I like being an independent contractor, as Boba Fett sort of pitches like teaming up on some things. And you know, there's a good reason for that for somebody in her line of work, specifically killing people with a high degree of skill. But so typically when you talk personal service contracts, what you're at the end of the day, she's agreeing to perform a service for him, right? That's the consideration, right? The benefit that Boba Fett is getting. He's getting her services in recovering this ship, a task that he can't do himself. I can't bake my own wedding cake, right? So that's why I hire this highly skilled baker to do it for me. I am highly skilled at eating the wedding cake, so I'm available for that. That's a separate podcast, though.
I think it would be a profoundly bad idea to suggest to a future spouse, I can bake the cake to save money, but it's gonna go out.
There's all sorts of things that are weird here that are non. It's about as like general a contract as you can get. If you can, I mean, I wonder whether this would even stand up if it was if it was brought into court. For one, it's unclear, other than like repaying a debt that she didn't agree to incur in terms of her medical care, what she's getting out of this. The implication is that she just gets her freedom, like from what, I don't know, from hanging out with Boba Fett and his like charred skin, I guess.
From the life debt, but yes.
Yeah. Hey, I took you to this chop shop. You really owed me.
Well, isn't, I'm pretty sure that's written somewhere in the Star Wars universe. If you save someone's life, they're your slave.
Like, yeah.
That's what it is.
Fine. I'll just take my robot abs out of you.
I'm going to pay you back for the medical care. I'm like, that makes sense. But the performance aspect is a bit much.
Well, there's a car note for it. It's just like a note. He's got a note on the guts that are inside her now. But... So that's an issue that you also see there's a lot of uncertainty about the actual mission. Like timing is often an issue and a point of specificity in these personal services contracts. So like I hire somebody to bake a wedding cake, need to specify the date that I need the cake for, the terms around that, so that the baker is absolutely clear. You're not, if I'm getting married, say August 27th, I don't need the cake August 28th. You've breached if you provide me the cake by that date. Boba Fett doesn't say anything about it. I think timing is a little less important here, except insofar as like Boba Fett doesn't want to wait forever to get his ship back. This seems to be a pretty urgent mission for him. But also just the app, they don't talk about any terms of the actual recovery mission. Like, what is she? Is she to get him in? Is she just to cover his back from a sniper position? And hey, that's the help that I'm giving you here. She ends up going sort of the full mile and you know, from stem to stern, just taking part in every aspect of this mission. But if I'm Fennec, I'm like, you want to get paid for that. So she kind of, she walks herself headlong into a really crummy contract here. It's just, I guess, a good thing that they survive. There's that moment that I really like where she's like, she's kind of has sized up the situation, used that little cool droid to go around and sees just what they're up against. And Boba Fett's like, well, I'm either going to get my ship or I'm going to die. And there's that moment where she's like, oh, I've bargained poorly. Anyhow.
I just wanted to toss in there that I think there's a general rule that where a contract does not specify like a term that you would consider to be essential, sometimes courts will still consider it to be valid if you can read in like an industry accepted term. Maybe since Star Wars has essentially a big industry around mercenary work, bounty hunting, assassins, maybe there's some standard terms here that we're just unaware of.
Yeah.
But the bit of remorse that we see from Fennec suggests that perhaps not.
And she's the one who comes up with the plan with, well, we'll just wait for them to go out and patrol. So as opposed to a frontal assault.
Which still translated to a frontal assault. It just like took a minute to bake like that.
Yeah, but it wasn't we'll go storm the castle.
True. Just that's true.
They do the Lord of the Rings Helm's Deep battle with how the the wall is breached by we'll go through the sewer outlet.
Yes. and fight the General Grievous cook.
Yeah. Again, hysterical, and I think that chef droid was in or a model of that droid was in Attack of the Clones.
Yes. Right. Good eye.
It's like, that looks, with the multi-arm, yeah. It's, but the watching with the subtitles, that chef droid and sous chef droid, I was like, wow. It explains how Bib Fortuna put on all that weight.
Yeah.
He was eating like a hut, and that's just not proportional. He needed a new nutritionist, but that good operation.
Or a CR surgeon.
You throw in how they dispatch the chef droid with basically slitting its throat. Well done. Again, we're not going to do a frontal charge against the cleave wielding droid. All distracted and you kill it. So, but that all said, this raises the issue of how do you recover the gunship legally? And so they don't do the court. So we're in this weird, I have to trespass to go get my ship, which raises this weird necessity defense. And they're trying to do it without being the aggressor to, because if they just go in guns blazing and start killing people, there's no self-defense part of that. But they're sneaking in, trying to get the ship with hoping to avoid a fight so they don't have to defend themselves. Would that work? Nari, do you want to
take this? So, I mean, let's just take a moment to analogize this. Let's say that I have, through mistake or even misdeed, obtained a piece of property from Tom. I have mislaid, let's say, the stormtrooper replica that he has behind him or something like that. And Tom knows about it, and he knows that it's sitting in my apartment. That does not usually give Tom the license to trespass onto my apartment, perhaps breaking and entering in order to try to recover it, hoping that he does not encounter me and then have to defend himself. That would not fly. This brings up the interesting sort of general background concept here, though, which is that ordinarily what Tom would have to do is ask for it back and or notify law enforcement or a court if I refuse to give it back. Of course, in Boba Fett, even more than in Mandalorian, I would say, there just isn't law enforcement, right? In Mandalorian, there's the New Republic, but it's generally very distant. It's generally very vague. It is not typically relied upon in the first instance if you think you have been wronged. In Boba Fett, it's even less so. Like, if there is a New Republic at this stage in time, it is so distant, nobody's even thinking about it. There is essentially only the gangs, right? And so I found this very telling when Fennec Shand, you know, actually broaches the topic, why don't you just ask for it? It's your property. Yeah. and he responds with what is accurate. If you don't have a court system, a government, a law enforcement to turn to, is that his claim to that property is only as good as his ability to back it up with force. And that's what we see here. So if you literally cannot go to some independent arbiter or law enforcement agency to say, hey, they're refusing to give me back my property, then I guess this is what you do. It's just, there is no analogy for this in our legal system. Do not try this at home, kids.
Well, there's this weird layer on there too, where if you go back to Return of the Jedi, Boba Fett was arguably in a contractual relationship with Jabba providing security, right? He's like the chief enforcer at the time for the Hutt. And he didn't do great in that job. The last battle that he was in, he promptly got knocked in the jetpack and fell into the Sarlacc. And then the guy that he was hired to guard got strangled and everything blew up. And now the number two has taken charge. So I thought what sprung into my mind was when he said, hey, I might not like the answer, is he goes in to talk to Bib, and Bib's like, I remember you. We had a deal and you fell through on your end, very literally, right near the Sarlacc. So no, you're not going to get your ship back until you fulfill some additional terms here. Whether that's legal in the real world, I don't know. But I think that's Bibbs. And he also, I love the line that happens later where he's like, I'm a lot less persuasive without my armor.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot to be said here for that, that, you know, under normal circumstances, could he go in and take by force, you know, coming through the front door? Sure, maybe. But in this instance, Bib probably has a little bit more power over the circumstances and is going to act like crime lords act.
And I think, oh, and the last thing I wanted to add there is just that this is an interesting theme, I think, throughout the show, that as we're seeing in all the present day things, and which maybe we'll get less of in the next episode, according to Josh, but is Boba essentially working on forming basically like a government, as opposed to simply being another crime lord boss. And so I think that's just an interesting little thread of this narrative, is kind of highlighting what happens when there isn't a government and there isn't law. Well, there might be law, but there's no law enforcement, and then which means there's no law. And then Boba trying to sort of maybe create this sort of enforcement and government in the first instance.
Yeah, and you see that at least in the last episode, in present day, and his interactions with the water monitor.
Oh yeah, sorry, not to skip ahead too much, but the previous episode. Yeah.
It I got where you were going with it, but you see the effects that's starting to have internally there, at least in Mos Espa, where it's kind of fraying relationships locally and kind of upsetting the balance of things. Because it was it's at least clear from the little bit that we see in the show that Jabba maintained order. Now, you know, you can interpret order and define that however you want to, but there was an order of things, and through a number of illicit deals and tributes and this and that, there was some semblance of law enforcement. There was, you know, a line in the sand, to use a very literal Tatooine pun there, and that is now gone, and Boba Fett has to reestablish that in some way in his own way. And people are very used to the way where it was marked with Jabba in charge and by extension Bib. And now Boba Fett is trying to find where that needs to be, but he needs his ship to do it.
Yeah. There's years ago, I did a post about employee safety in Jabba's palace. And one of the topics was the duty of safety owed to Boba Fett. And I looked at it as from the independent contractor perspective. And it boiled down to Boba Fett and taking on Skywalker as an independent contractor. And there was the closest case that I found was one involving an injury on an oil rig where an independent contractor got hurt. And it was basically like, I should have known what it was doing. And I think Boba would fall into that category, because it's like, he saw his dad beheaded by a Jedi. Like, he's had a lot of experiences with Jedi seeking revenge. He think he moved on from that. But when you think about Bib taking a position you failed to perform, there were other factors at play that were outside of his control. This wasn't like running the sail barge aground. This was, they were trying to execute a bunch of people, and it ended badly for them because they fought back. And, you know, maybe you don't take a sex slave. Maybe you don't get murdered that way.
Really, you know? That all boils down to a products liability case against Jetpack. So we're a little bump from Han Solo and his vibro axe caused you to rocket straight into the sail barge and bounce off into a horrendous creature in the sand. But that's another podcast.
But if, yeah, it could be a good blog about the bad thing, faulty. Yeah. But we also have a comment about how Boba. I get why he said that. Either of you insight on why Boba might think he was double-crossed by Bib?
Not me, no, sorry.
I'm trying to remember that point in the episode, like the context of it, or the actual quote. My memory's just foggy on it, that's all.
It's, yeah. Again, it's something to think about.
Yeah, it would have happened potentially in a period that we haven't seen yet, like a flashback period around the time he would have gone off to find his armor and meet Din and all that, and given him reason to come marching back to Tatooine and put a blaster bolt in his chest. So we may have not seen that yet.
Sorry, fair. Just a damper in your hopes for no more flashbacks.
There might be one. Again, it looked like there was a conclusion. So, but maybe he enjoys the tank. He finds it. But again, he's, according to the show, completely healed unless he gets hurt again. Anywho.
I'm sure that will not happen in his line of work.
No, totally safe. He's fine.
Yeah, he's fine.
He has plot. He has plot armor now, so it's okay.
So with the raid, who does it matter who shot first if there's a trespasser trying to reclaim their property?
Well,
everybody's in the wrong.
I know. I just want to asterisk right there, which is that trespass also is generally not alone enough to use deadly force. I guess you could query whether this property is someone's home, but
for Boba Fett, that's a legitimate question.
Because if we're talking about, like, if somebody trespasses on your yard, you're going to get into a lot of legal trouble if you take a shot at them in the real world. If you wake up in the middle of the night and someone is currently trespassing in your house, you have a pretty good defense if you take a shot at them. This is why we get into these really difficult situations, not to get too topical, but in the modern United States, which has very high home gun ownership, where police knock maybe and announce, maybe not heard because people are asleep and it's 2 a.m, and enter, and then the homeowners who are gun owners take a shot at the people that they believe have just broken into their house. It's one of those really crazy scenarios where if you have a strong Second Amendment but not a strong Fourth Amendment, you will have both sides technically authorized to be shooting at each other. So just to caveat that, if this is considered like a home and we're under, you know, U.S. law, you kind of do have a right to defend your house with lethal force. There's obviously the inquiry of whether or not you have to still reasonably believe that you or your people in your house are in danger. But there's a much stronger assumption if you're in your own house that is true compared to then if someone's on your porch, on your yard, or passing by. So trespass alone, typically not enough. You also, though, as you have pointed out on many an occasion, Josh, you also cannot use deadly force in the defense of property in general. So, like, someone's trying to steal your car, or in this case, your ship. You can't just take shots at them. So I'm going to hazard a guess here that everybody is at various points in the wrong.
Yeah, all that shooting and killing just sort of cancels it. It's like in football when you get 2 penalties by either side at once and they just cancel out. So it's,
yeah, maybe it's the opposite of what I said was the real world example where everybody has a right to be shooting. Nobody has a right to be shooting at each other here.
Yeah. This escalated quickly. It got out of hand.
The real victim in all of this is the rat catcher droid. So I'll just
put that on record, that poor
had to turn himself off.
But we see him later, so he got that's over true. It. But he was terrified and went, I'm done. And no. But there's a pretty significant body count in recovering the ship. So,
and not strictly artificial life, which we should be respectful of.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a huge moral issue with using a power droid as a IED for I'll shoot it to blow it up to take out a bunch of others. They're slow moving. That gonk did nothing wrong. And
they're doing his job, living his life.
Yeah. I'm going to hope that model is not capable of higher thought functions.
Yeah.
Somebody called him because he's like a 4-legged gonk, a chunky gonk, which I very much appreciated.
Oh, that's adorable. I do love that too.
The most we've seen of a gonk droid having a personality was in Bad Batch. And that one clearly is like, he's not quite R2 level adventurer, yeah. But there's a personality there. It's like, oh, that just, it just bothers me to see that. And I mean, it's not as bad as Mandalorian season one, where they went through like four astromechs.
Yeah.
They just like get shot and killed. It's just like four of them. It's like, that's intense. So this has a better track record. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Also, has good it stuff. Ever been confirmed that the original, like the origin for this model of droid was that they wanted another droid and they didn't have the budget, so they put a trash can on top of somebody?
Oh, probably. If it hasn't been confirmed, somebody's just lying.
Looks like to me. Every time I see one, I just remark, oh, there's the trash can droid.
Yeah. ILM is just out of parts. They're like, oh, what do we need one exactly. more. What do we do? Dump that out over there.
That makes sense in 1906.
Well, I think since then it's become part of the lore. And so, like, they've continued to do it. But I wonder if the origin of it was just, we need one more droid and we don't have the parts.
So,
George says we can't spend another dollar on it. Just we'll make do.
Yeah. So, there's all kinds of levels of wrong with that. We see an airstrike on the speeder bike gang, which is emotionally satisfying.
Although I think we're still not sure, at least to me, maybe I'm wrong. I thought there's still some doubt as to whether or not they were the ones that killed the Tusken tribe, because I thought Fennec cast doubt on that.
Yeah, she questions immediately Nikto's or a speeder gang and their ability to take
Because that
take
seems
out
surprising to me too. Like, this group seems super badass. Like, they were like extremely talented warriors, including with guns. Yeah. They now also had a couple speeder bikes. And somehow, poof, they're just gone.
It would have to be overwhelming force.
That's the thing. So anyway, I'm still like, holding on to my theory that it's not them.
Yeah. Well, that ties sort of right in with the legal issue here, right? So, self-defense isn't going to apply here because the killing of the Tuskens, in Boba's mind, that's the justification, right? That they're connected. And they're going to pay for it. There's no defense of others argument that can be made here because that killing, the danger to the Tuskens, that's already come and gone. So there's a temporal limit on self-defense and defense of others. It doesn't just go on and on forever. Go back to that home invasion scenario. If you're in threat, or you could theoretically defend your family or friends that are in the house, but then the person runs off and you go chasing them out of your house down the street, and then you kill them two or three blocks away, it's going to be very, very difficult for you to mount a successful self-defense or defense of others, because the danger is past. So this is sort of a pure retribution killing, like classic Tatooine, classic Star Wars. Very satisfying on many levels, but
yeah, and you were mentioning like the removal in terms of like time and space, mm-hmm. I guess also, but this also would apply, for example, in a slightly fictional Tatooine in which there's law and order and you can go to a judge. Let's say that Boba gets charged by some family member for the murder of the bikers. It would also apply if he tried to argue that he should instead face with second degree because it was a crime of passion, right? That he was so incensed by. And this might work if he had, in the immediate aftermath of seeing the Tuskens dead, the biker gang was still nearby or even there. That would probably work. There's a very good argument for that. But this is so far removed that I don't think it would even work to excuse the crime as a crime of passion.
No.
I think that in terms of a force bill, which don't enact any of those for a reason, because it's a proactive, it's like a mini declaration of war. And we did it with the Barbary Pirates, and we did it with the Ku Klux Klan. And maybe with the quasi-war with France during the Jefferson administration, but I'm not positive on that one. That said, these guys are dangerous and I'm gonna do an airstrike to take them out. We don't do that in the United States, I mean, since 1870. Like, that was the last time we did one in the UK. Generation of the Ku Klux Klan. We haven't done it since. It worked until the progressive era, but so it's again pure retribution. And what? I should have a problem with it, but I don't.
Well, even if they had that sort of situation, Boba's not in any position of, like, he's just gotten back his ship. He's not the daimyo.
Yeah, yet. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, go ahead.
There's no color. There's no, like, reasonable color of law in any. This is just Boba Fett pissed off that he thinks the Nyctos killed his friends and he's going after them on his own. It might be different if at this point Bib had been like, hey, these guys are a pain, or the Pikes or something like that. But it's not the case. This is just pure retribution.
Or if, like you were pointing out, if Boba were further along in the storyline and he were now essentially the government, right? Like, there are circumstances in which, like let's say that, I mean, these guys were a menace. Let's say that they were deemed to be such a serious public threat, or he thought that they were about to attack someone else, or they're essentially a terrorist group or something, in which as law enforcement, you might be authorized in using deadly force. But he's not law enforcement. Although this, again, highlights how when you don't have any law enforcement, all you have is self-help, right? And this is the purest expression of self-help. And it's what the world looks like if you don't have law, right? Is you killed one of my family members, I'm going to go kill some of yours.
Yeah.
I actually, before we go like full mob untouchables analogy here, there might be a colorable argument that the bikers took out a Tusken tribe, a tribe that Boba was a member of. That could be a nation state. And Boba, as a member of it, was acting in a state of war. So there could be an argument.
Although he's, this is going to open a whole nother can of worms for Boba, because he is not wearing any kind of insignia that would mark him as a member of the armed forces. He's certainly not a regular armed forces. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of other things that are problematic for him there. I would say the bikers have a more uniform appearance.
That's true.
He has all the black robes. If they could see him, they would know.
I would say the Tuskens have a fairly uniform appearance, but Boba, not so much.
You couldn't see through my windshield, my black garb here.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy. And what I appreciated about the scene from a just like a military tactical scenario is, you know, we see the ship in the distance come in and open fire, and it's glorious. But he doesn't want to do the personal kill and like lecture someone before dispatching them. Open fire, and with the leader, he uses a missile. And that was as personal as he got with, you're dead now. There was no witty exchange or anything like that with, you're fired. It was just clean to the point, and they're dead.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the problem with so many other films where people feel that they need to make a speech. It's like, you're supposed to kill the other. It's not a time for a lecture.
So. Another reason why I don't think that this is more plot driven, not legal, but another reason why I don't think that the Nyctos were actually the ones that did the killing of the Tuskens. That scene, that sequence, as satisfying as it was, as cool as it was, I think there's a bigger build up, a bigger reveal when Boba finds out who actually did it.
It's the Pikes. That's my theory.
They still suck. They still needed to go, and I'm fine with them getting destroyed. But yeah, they didn't do the massacre.
But I think it's the Pikes.
I go back to the theory. It was Bib Fortuna that he was using them, and I mentioned that before. That's why Boba decided to kill Bib and take the throne, was because of what the Tusken. Perhaps Bib was using the raiders as a the bikers as a kind of a secret police in order to instill fear and control and dominion. And he saw Boba as, well, not necessarily realizing it was Boba, but saw the Tusken nation as a threat to that, with extracting payment from the Pikes as a tariff.
I'm going to, this is not legally in this plot, but I'm going to defend my theory that it was the Pikes all along, which is that I found it too convenient that immediately after the Pikes, you know, tell Boba that he should go deal with the bikers because they're getting the tribute from them. That the tribe is killed, and the only evidence that it's the bikers is the symbol, right? Which would be relatively well known.
Yeah.
And so I feel like my theory is that the Pikes were not in control of the bikers. They're just trying to kill two birds, literally two birds, one stone, right? The bikers were a thorn in their side. The Tuskens are now a threat. And so if they kill the Tusken tribe and frame the bikers for it, and then Boba goes after the bikers, they solved all their problems.
Hey, no, you're not paying protection to anybody at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a great idea. So
no, it's a great theory, a terrible idea. Nobody should ever do that.
It's good analysis of the plot. Again, good script.
Oh yeah, oh, and I have one more actual legal thought, which is just that we've all three of us, I think, have mentioned how like this felt good that he went after the biker gang. I do want to mention that like retribution is one of the values that is served by having a justice system, that is served by prosecuting somebody for a crime. However, in our legal system, it is not the only thing that's served. If it were, we would have the victims, the decedents, or the survivors of the victim, right, decide the punishment, or we would have them even prosecute the case or something like that. It is not the only value that we serve when we, in our justice system, we go for rehabilitation, we go for disabling someone from doing something bad to someone else. There's all, like, I think that's called incapacitation. There's a handful of values that we serve, and retribution is not the only one.
Well, the Nyctos were incapacitated. They
were certainly incapacitated. Not so much rehabilitated. I'm going to just throw that out there.
Yeah, they might have had some sense.
Rehab blown upitated.
I learned something. I should never do that again.
Speaking of getting blown up.
Yeah, so... The Sarlacc. I understand. I get Boba probably had a concussion after that Jawa smashed him in his skull, so he might not remember getting stripped by those little schmucks. But he's incorrect to think that the armor.
It was after an innocent Sarlacc.
Yeah. So they again. It was probably therapeutic. And I did look how Fennec said fire in the hole, so
classic. Yeah, the 6-year-old, 7-year-old Star Wars fan in me enjoyed this scene. The adult in me was like, somebody who is letting the 6-year-old out in themselves wrote this scene, because I was like, yeah. Otherwise this required me suspending a lot of my the limited belief that I exercise in Star Wars. But it did get me thinking about the Sarlacc as an endangered species. You know, this isn't a common animal, right? They're pretty prized. I think about at Galaxy's Edge, if you've been there, and in one of the backstories for that part of the galaxy, there's this bit about how Dock Ondar, which is one of the shop runners for one of the shops that you can go in at Disney World or Disneyland, he has a baby Sarlacc on display, and it's like this priceless pet that he has. So it's I think it would fall in the realm of what we would, you know, probably class as an endangered species here on our planet. And he gets blown up very quickly, like very unceremoniously, with the coolest weapon in the Star Wars universe. And yes. I was just curious whether
definitely true.
Yeah. Here, I guess where I settled on is endangered species are protected by sort of a cloak of pretty robust legal protections here. There could be jail time. There's significant fines if you kill an endangered species, but it's not without exception, as is like that's the entire law. And with endangered species in particular, if two of the biggest exceptions, one of the biggest ones that would apply here would be if the killing is related to a threat to human life. And so here, there's a very clear threat to both Boba and Fennec, who are about to be pulled directly into the Sarlacc. I thought it was cool that thing has enough strength to pull in a starship. But in that instance, the killing would be allowed. There's an example. You also see in the real world, you know, they'll go out. You'll typically see after a say an endangered species like a wolf or a certain type of bear. If they're found to have attacked a human or something like that, usually you'll see park officials, like National Park Service officials or game officials, go out and euthanize that animal. And that's not a violation of the law because of the threat to human life. We don't see this in Star Wars so much, but in the real world as well, you sometimes see it if there's a threat to livestock. So there are certain species of wolves. I think it's like the gray wolf out in New Mexico. Occasionally those are hunted down when they become a threat. They get too close to livestock that are out there. So that species has been protected since like 97, I think. But you do see those getting killed from time to time by state officials, and they're not violating the law in doing that. So at the end of the day, it's okay to drop a seismic charge into a sarlacc. You just have to be about to die.
I was going to throw a seismic charge into your defense of Boba Fett here.
Do it.
Which is just to, so first of all, he is still not yet a government official, right? So he can't, I think, claim the cloak of authority that you would have if you were a parks official going out to put down a dangerous animal. Again, if he were just a little further in the plot, maybe he wouldn't do that. It's also and this is just a Star Wars thing, not necessarily a legal thing, because we don't really have like crazy dangerous endangered creatures that are also, as far as we know, completely sedentary. So like, it's only a threat to humans if a human walks over to it.
If you fly your spaceship directly over his mouth.
Exactly. If you fall into it, or because your jetpack malfunctions. But and then that was the other thing, is that I was wondering about was, is there, and this I don't actually know the answer to, I'd have to do more research, but I wonder if there's an exception to the defense of human life if you are essentially intentionally causing the threat to human life by, I assume there's like an unclean hands theory or something there.
Yeah. I think about the goofballs at like Yellowstone and different parks that, you know, let me get a selfie with this really dangerous animal and
bison. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do not get close to a bison.
If you were to then like kill that animal, and that animal had like, I don't know if bison still have protection, but if they did, it's a stretch for me to imagine there'd be much sympathy or legal protection for you having started that.
Yeah. So Judge Beckerman and I, the podcast about Godzilla, I think it's after King of the Monsters, and we did talk about the endangered species side of the story. And she raised a case where a couple were attacked by a bear that was endangered species, and they shot the bear to protect themselves. They were still charged, but it was ultimately dismissed because there was an exception for self-defense. But this isn't a bear coming into a camp. This is you.
It's you walking into a bear cave.
Yeah. Okay. What's in here? Like, and they're not clear if the Sarlacc's still alive or not. So it's they're definitely poking the bear. And there's a wonderful old Saturday Night Live sketch with Dan Aykroyd about mauled, and where he's talking about his book where he's mauled by a bear. And you know, part of the there was a lawsuit against the Park Service for not having signs that say don't try to ride the bears. And this is kind of in, you know, that category of don't ride the bear. Don't poke the Sarlacc and hope.
Don't walk into the Sarlacc's mouth.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so there's some big issues here with they enter the Sarlacc's domain, and Boba, I think this is again a six-year-old writing it type of thing of like, wouldn't this be cool? And the answer is yes, it did look super cool. But he should have known that his armor was stripped off of him. But I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because he had a head injury.
Yeah.
He probably didn't remember how he got stripped. So, and if you remember Jawa stripped me, he might have a different opinion about Jawas.
Yeah. I also, just as a side note, I find the exploration of Tatooine ecology fascinating, because like combine this with the Mandalorian referring to the crate dragon having eaten a sarlacc. That's why there's an empty sarlacc pit and stuff like that. So I didn't have any of that knowledge, Tom, until you told me about the sarlacc being like the baby sarlacc being like such a precious thing. Like I imagine there aren't that many, but if they have predators, if they form a part of the Tatooine ecosystem, I wonder if they are endangered.
We don't know.
Yeah, just interesting.
It is fascinating.
Maybe it's not so much that the baby is so precious because it's so rare. It's just that you have to go into a sarlacc to get it.
Yeah, really, really exceptionally dangerous.
Exactly.
Although Boba Fett just dives right in with no armor, no nothing on. Doesn't even like wrap a towel around his head. He's just like, I'll be back.
Yeah, and Fennec's like, you know.
Do you have a canteen? Can you pour some water over me to get this acid off?
Yeah, the slow-burning acid. So, all right. So we have when Boba gets out of the tank and goes to the sanctuary, we have a wonderful scene with Jennifer Beals. I'm trying to talk down Chrysanthemum, and with this offer of put the Tredosian down and we will wipe your debt and let everyone go back to partying, which, I mean, again, I do adore her and I love the way that she tried handling the situation. So like that was glorious, but we do have a contract issue here with put him down, don't rip his arm off. Everyone knows you're the Wookiee. You are a powerful, strong, beautiful Wookiee. Put him down and don't rip out an arm. Was that, I mean, we have all the elements of a contract being formed here with offer, consideration, just waiting on acceptance. It is a beautiful contract formation scene. And Nari, your reaction, would that have been enforceable?
No. So
put the Tredosian down.
No. So you I mean, this would be a great example of, you know, maybe contract under duress. Like you cannot threaten, you cannot promise not to do something that you did not have a right to do, something unlawful, right? Like pay me $1,000, Josh, and I will not murder you. Like, this is not a valid contract. Now, granted, if I still murdered you, you know, you would have many causes of action, least of which would be that you get your $1,000 back. But no, it would also be perhaps a contract against public interest. Like, I just don't think this would fly, Tom. Can you validly form a contract in order to, with your only consideration being, I will not tear off your arms?
But that wasn't negotiating with the Tredosian. That was, the Tredosian would have been a third.
I will not tear off your employee or customer's arms.
Yeah.
The Tredosian was a third party beneficiary in the fact that.
That's true. That's true.
He would not be dismembered.
That would not, you know. I'm thinking I have a wide gray area of Star Wars legal issues that happened. This would fall outside of even that wide area. I do like, however, that we have on one end of the spectrum, you have like Bossk, like an angry, like very menacing looking Trandoshan. Right. And then on the other end of the spectrum is what I would look like if I was a Trandoshan, which is these guys. Like the dorkiest possible Trandoshans, like, yeah, we won a couple bucks. And then, so I have no doubt, Chrysanthemum, beyond like interspecies beef issues between Wookiees and Trandoshans, just looked at these guys and couldn't help but want to rip limbs off. So it's like,
also, can Trandoshans grow limbs back? Maybe does that change it?
I think they can. But my Trandoshan biology is a little rusty.
I'll need to look at the encyclopedia tomorrow, which is at the office, because it adds to decor. But Oh boy, howdy. Yeah, it's like the jock beating up the nerds, and I identified with the nerds real quickly with like, they probably weren't slavers. They were just doing their thing and got the crap beat out of them. It was horrible. But it's neat to see Chrysanthemum in such glory. And you can see, I texted Tom about this, but you can see his scar on his head that was given to him by Kenobi with his lightsaber. And one of the stories about Chrysanthemum being on Tatooine during the middle period where Kenobi's in exile and Luke is growing up. And it's just like, that's neat. Neat to be able to see that. And he still goes back to Tatooine. So, but again, that was, I think, a beautiful contract scene. And then he offers him a job, which is the best way to solve economic crises and depression is to employ people. And this is just being put into such wonderful form with like the mods were out doing patrols as law enforcement and to make sure that things were going the right way. So it's like, again, functional government doing its thing. And
he's getting there. He really is getting there to establishing a legit government.
Yeah. So what you're saying is Black Chrysanthemum is about to be Sheriff Black Chrysanthemum, and he's going to have his little hat and a little gun belt. I'm
he
all
can
in.
Have whatever
little badge,
he wants.
A little Wookiee badge.
I mean, I want to put a hat on him, but I mean, he can wear whatever he wants, and we'll just go that way. But yeah, it's establishing law and order. And then we have the dinner scene. Again, we'll set up the tables over the trap door, which from a common law perspective on your duty to guests. So these guys were either business invitees or guests. So there's a heightened duty at that point. So we're going to set up the tables on the trap door so they get the message. They could be tasty treats for the rancor at any point in time. Undue influence in forming a contract. Either of you want to take a jump on that one?
Attempted, because it didn't work, as amazing as that is. These guys are like local level. They were lieutenants or I guess captains under Jabba. These aren't big players by any means. And so Boba's attempting to strike a deal, make a contract with them of some type. And you see the Rancor Claws kind of come up out of the grate there in an attempt to influence the contract. And so if your agreement to a deal like that is made under fear of your own life, that if you disagree or decline, you're going to be killed, or in this case, ripped apart and then devoured by this rancor, you're not really entering into a deal. There's a deal has been entered into in name only, but you don't have a valid contract there. But what's amazing is they look at the rancor, they get a little scared, and then they're like, actually, we're not going to strike any deal with you, Boba.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Because right before the, Munchie, because we don't have a name yet, but let's just go with Munchie. Because you can just pop him in his mouth and it'll be delicious. There's an open threat to Boba with, what stops me from killing you and taking over?
This is true.
And that's the point where a very good boy decides to make his presence known. And it's adorable with, Boba just going, oh, he's hungry, and like putting the bone down the grate for Munchie to have a snack. They then go from openly hostile to we'll be neutral. It's the decision making.
True.
I think
True.
All parties involved will have a very hard time enforcing this contract in a court of law if there were a contract.
Yeah, this is corporations and contracts, but this would not fly on so many levels. No. Yeah. But it does make him at least play Switzerland, and Boba's going to have to do the heavy lifting of throwing out the pikes.
What I like about it is that it really highlights the limits of his power. He can't even get a bunch of local know-nothings to align under him. The best that he can do is get them to just kind of put their hands in their pockets and whistle while all the fighting takes place. And even that's a shaky deal, because to them, to these just, I guess, local level crime lords, if they throw in with, I guess, the pikes or anybody else that he's fighting and Boba dies, like the person that's going to come after them for breaking this neutrality deal is dead.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a real shaky deal that he struck. I saw some criticism like, well, you know, Boba, like criticizing Boba Fett for this. And I'm like, what do you expect of him? He has an assassin, one person with him. He's got a rancor, but that's about it. Other than this gang of mods, he really doesn't have much muscle.
Half a dozen mods and maybe two Gamorreans. Is that it?
Yeah, right.
Handful of droids.
And he's just now fully healed by the miracle of Bacta. I have a Band-Aid. I need a Bacta tank of my own right now.
I mean, the Bacta tank would be super helpful on so many levels.
I'll take a Bacta spray. I will settle for a Bacta spray. Yeah.
Like IG-11 and Mandalorian.
Exactly.
Now, that's a great, great segue for who can we expect that they'll pay to come help? And as soon as that discussion happens, we have the music from the Mandalorian start playing. So that's very big foreshadowing that we might see Din Djarin, which would make sense. They would call him because they were helpful in the past. They have a relationship. It would be interesting for Boba to realize that the Jedi who showed up with Scott, has he learned a lot from that experience? I don't know.
He had a long time to think about it.
That's true.
It's been several years. Time passed. People were like, oh, man, I was wrong. I was hanging out with the wrong guys, and I got involved with some bad stuff, and I'm sorry for that to happen. So, like, there's time for that real self-realization, which I think Bo's done a lot of. Yeah. That said, I saw a couple people posting, like, you know, kind of a bingo scorecard of, like, who do you think will show up, and it included, like, Bosk, AD-88. The one was...
IG-88's dead unless he's been reassembled.
88?
IG-88, yeah, you see him destroyed on Cloud City. Boba Fett destroyed him, and you see him like in pieces in the like where the Ugnaughts are fighting or like throwing C-3PO's head around.
That's supposed to be about IG.
Yeah, Boba beat him to Cloud City and.
Okay, I thought it was, well, there's
could be reassembled. That's the beauty of a droid, right? They could just, you know, solder them back together, I guess.
And they, you know, the producers made a bunch of them, so there could be.
We've seen. I would totally be on board.
So that would make sense. One group was guessing like Han and Chewie, which could be a good way to get the cast from Solo in on this, and you know, make a. Age up one of them. so we'll see. I mean, I'm happy with the Mandalorian, but I'm sure we're going to get some other surprises. Either of you have any hopes for that we see?
No,
I mean, I can't get enough of Mandalorian, so that's who I'm hoping for.
Din's got Jedi tuition bills to pay now, so he's got.
Yeah, that's right.
You think Luke is training Grogu for free? No, he's got to keep the lights on there at the Jedi Academy. So
he's probably doing supply runs. I mean, Luke's going to need help building that temple, so they're probably.
Luke's not going to ask where the money is coming from. He's just going to send the tuition bill and cash the checks as they come in. So
private school, man, that stuff isn't cheap.
You got to feed all the students. There's a lot of work that happens.
Yeah, so. I'm okay. So now you've got you've what I don't want to have happen is they introduce a bunch of people to scratch some itches of fans, and it crowds the room so that people want to hear less about Boba, or, you know, there's room for Kersant to grow, and we see more of him. Suddenly that space goes down. Din is going to suck up a lot of oxygen in the room already. He's, you know, at this point in his character's popularity. So I'd be down with maybe a Dengar or something like that. Somebody familiar, but this doesn't need to be like Endgame where, you know, the portal opens and we get every cool like bounty hunter or whoever that's ever lived. So yeah, we'll see.
They're going to need more guys. Like they need more than a dozen, you know, to take on the Pike. So they do need a small army. And I, like, again, if that's a bunch of Gamorreans, fine. Like there are foot soldiers that you can have, but they do need the turnout.
Go ahead.
It's like with the Hutts riding on, you know, with all of their indentured servants carrying them. Like
that's a very gentle way to put it.
Yeah. It's not like they're all getting backstories, but if you look, it's like, whoa, there's a bunch of different species that are doing some serious heavy lifting. I mean, it could be something similar.
Yeah.
I will just the timing. You first.
No, the timing doesn't work out, but I like to Disney wants to save a little bit of money, so he goes and recruits a bunch of like old clones, and then they just pay Tim Morrison like a little bit of extra money to play himself a bunch of times, and that's how he stocks out his army.
Well, again, the Bad Batch live action would make sense. So because of Fennec,
it'd be a little bit old now, but that's okay. We can work around that. What were you going to say, Nori?
Oh, I was going to throw out there that also the one Tusken tribe that we saw get wiped out is, I think, like a small portion of the number of Tuskens that are out there. My impression was, because they said this definitely during one of the episodes where the Tusken tribe was talking to Boba, that there are many tribes and many of them have chosen raiding. Some tribes, including theirs, have chosen instead sort of more of a peaceful path. But so presumably there are tons more Tuskens out there. Presumably they would all be pretty pissed off. This is my theory, at least, if Boba could present them with evidence that some group, be it the Pikes or someone else, was responsible for wiping out a tribe. Like, even if they're not, you know, all grouped together in the kind of way we think of a nation state, presumably they are pissed off if an outsider comes in and wipes out one
of their
tribes.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a really great point.
I'm all for the importance of a Tusken, you know, massive turnout in force.
I'm really hoping for that, to be honest. So
that would be neat to see them just butcher the Pikes and seriously.
Oh yeah. So it's very Lawrence of Arabia. It's also very Dune, right? With the
It would work. I mean, I also wouldn't put it past Jon Favreau for his, you know, character heavy to make the appearance, but I'm that's just me. With, I wouldn't be surprised if he writes
really cool.
He could do it. But and that's also thinking that he did play heavy. I think he did. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. Regardless, I've really loved all the Bantha action.
Yes.
You know, we got this. I ordered this for Mando season 2. I remember them being sold at Galaxy's Edge. That was before all this. That was before we're seeing Banthas as giant, slow-moving golden retrievers that you want to hug.
Yeah, before Banthas went mainstream.
Yeah.
They're like big Muppets. Like, you brush their teeth, and they look cuddly, and they want snacks, and they wag their tail. It just, they've made Banthas adorable.
So, yeah. I also, this is the first pod for Boba that I've joined you guys for. So I just want to voice the opinion also that this show, in a, like Mandalorian also, but this show has continued the trend of taking things that you would never think of as cute and like suddenly they're super cute. Like I think the Tusken dog, crocodile dogs, I think are they skags? What was the word for them?
No, they're
mastiff.
Not an, yeah, massives.
There we go. I remember I've bought them in a video game once in Star Wars, but they had never previously been presented to me as adorable, and those were adorable. Yeah. And same with the Rancor. Never thought of a Rancor as cute. Now this one is basically Fido.
So. They're emotionally complex creatures.
Yeah, I was like, what? It's like a duck imprints on the first person it sees.
I want to hug Danny Trejo and then the Rancor. Like,
yeah. It's,
and it'd be long hugs because I'm happy to see both. So, it's...
but yeah, remarkable job that Favreau and everyone else has done taking things that look on first blush dangerous, scary, ugly, and making them adorable.
Yeah,
agreed. They've really done a great job with this. And for there are some folks who are writing that any other Star Wars property needs to stay away from Tatooine, which immediately makes me worry about Kenobi. And I'm fine with Tatooine-based stories. You know, I was initially not thrilled with the idea of a Book of Boba Fett show, and now I love it. Because I was like, what are they gonna do? And it's like, well, he's not the bounty hunter, because we've seen that with Mandalorian, and they did a giant spin on that. This is playing crime lord, bringing a functional government to Tatooine. Okay, did not see that coming. Love it. I'm pretty sure they're going to do a wild card with Kenobi leaves Tatooine, because if there's a face off with Vader, it's not going to be on Tatooine. So I'm, again, what they're doing is working. Hats off to them. I would prefer Andor not hang out on Tatooine just so we can have some variety. But for those complaining that we've been on Tatooine too much, I disagree. I want to know where the oceans went.
Yeah, me yeah. too. Yeah, I really love the exploration of Tatooine, its history, its people. I've enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, as long as they're adding to the lore and expanding instead of just treading in the, not treading in the same territory in terms of the planet, but expand, like my knowledge of what that planet is very, very different than it was 3 years ago. And to me, you keep doing that, that's fine. You do put it on whatever planet you want. That's a good recipe.
I agree.
We go from the Tuskens in 1977 basically mugging Luke Skywalker. And now we have a complex society thanks to Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett that just kept turning it up in our appreciation and awe of this fictional species. Mm-hmm. It's like more of that. And so, yeah, I'm very happy. And there's a bunch of legal issues for us to discuss. So Tuesday at midnight, our time, Thomas, a lot later for you or earlier in the morning, depending on how you look at time. But we're approaching the end. I don't know how many, is this 8 episodes?
7. So we've got 3 more.
Oh no, so great.
Probably 6 will be a cliffhanger. So we'll be, if they follow form of Mandalorian. But yeah, Star Wars works great in long form storytelling on TV. Who knew? Mm-hmm. So yeah. So anyway, everyone, thank you for tuning in. We just got our celebration pictures in, so hopefully we'll know around March 1 if we're going to have panels. So stay tuned, cross your fingers, and hope that we get selected. Regardless, we got tickets, so we're going to go anyway. We're going to miss nerding out, and it's going to be a glorious time. So everyone stay safe, stay healthy, and above all else, stay geeky.